Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday. TGI Friday. Absolutely. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm cool. What's up?
Oh, not too much. Not too much. We got a big board full of poetry tonight. And it's a quiet day here in my world, and I like those. And, just trying to, make it through the week. It's been a long week. It's been a long, long week. And, and tomorrow I can sleep in. No school tomorrow, So that's always a pleasure. No, everything's good. And I hope everything's good with you. And, Sounds like, from what you said, sounds like your weather's just wonderful. And I'm jealous of that. I think it's a little cooler than that here. But it all works. It all works. So, I don't know. We got carryovers, and our carryovers have carryovers, and we have poetry, and then we have standing room only, and we still have poetry under that. We got lots of stuff happening. I don't know. I think we're going to have carryovers tonight, but we'll get there. It'll all be good. And just so everybody's aware, Halloween week is coming up, and this will be our sixth annual Halloween celebration. We have contests up all over the place. A couple of our shows are this show okay, is just for open poetry. We have open poetry for keeping it brief. I don't know what other one we have, but there's a couple of folks that aren't running any contests because that's just not what they do. And everybody else's contests are up and ready to be seen. I have the link over on my page. And it looks like it's going to be a load of fun. So hopefully everybody will take a peek and join in. I know it's a little early for some people, but it's always nice to be prepared ahead of time and just see what's happening with that. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Think we can clear our board tonight?
Ooh. It would be hard-pressed if Betty.
I'm telling you, I don't think we could clear that board. To put it bluntly, there's not a snowball chance of hell of that happening. But it's fun to dream. So listen, we have a couple callers on the line. And first we have Felon. Hello, Felon. How are you tonight?
Hello, I'm good. And I've already done my little Halloween poem, and it's not a brevity, Phil. Not a brevity.
Right. There you go. Well, we have a whole lot of contests. You can just keep on going if you feel so up to it. Yep.
I'm going to.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good stuff. So I look forward to them. We'll have fun. We have topic boards and we have contests and we have all kinds of stuff. So it'll be a good week. It usually is. People never disappoint us on Halloween week, that's for sure. And for our next caller, we have Laurent. So hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party.
Thank you, and good evening. How are you guys?
Hello.
Good evening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes. So we have a lot of stuff happening. So everybody is okay. And, just loads of poetry. I keep looking and going, wow. But I'm telling you what we're going to do. We're going to start out with the Carryovers from Gray show. And that was a tribute show for Jessica D. And, I think that's where we're going to start the night off tonight and get running through that. And, we got lots of ground to cover. So we are going to start here, I think. Let's see what I have. I'm going to put up this piece for you, Rex, please. And this
Boy.
Is by Dammit Big. What up, you, Rex? It is up.
Wow. Outcast Heart by Diamond Dave. Oh, he used to be Dammit Dave.
I thought I did say Dammit Dave. I'm sorry. Diamond Dave.
Romantic recollections, now muddled memories, tainted by waters from a warped wishing well of time and tide. Misty moments and misshapen mirrors reveal false reflections of felicity, perfused with elusive images of spectral passions that forever haunt an outcast heart. And poem. Damn, and
nice
free verse. Something different from Dave.
Yeah,
all right, since you started speaking, why don't you continue that thought?
Well, I thought this was an excellent write and a great reflection of the chosen poem by Jessica called Mosaic. And I think that, it was really well done, and I thought it was nicely written. Absolutely. And great job, Diamond Dave, and I apologize for messing up your name. Really, I'm such a creature of habit.
That's all right. I get it. And, Laurent, how about you?
Misty moments and misshapen mirrors reveal false reflections of felicity. I thought that spoke so well to the outcast heart. And don't we all have those spectral passions? I think we do. Nice write.
Thank you, Laurent. And, Fel, come on.
Dammit Dave. Why did you go to Diamond Dave? Got me all jacked up.
Mess with me.
mind these days. Outcast Heart. I mean, that's a great title for this poem in itself. Containing waters and the warped wishes of well of time and tide. You know, we often throw that sparkling our coin in the water, hoping to get something much more than we get. And we have all these assumptions on ourselves, and yet we don't tell the other person what we're wanting. Sometimes we don't communicate what our wants and needs or what we perceive this relationship going to be, and we're the ones that get called up in those reflections that are a mishap from our own poor communication. And then the illicit images of sex, compassion. Sometimes it is what it is, and your heart is only outcasted because you let it get haunted because you set these images that were not even meant to be for you. So that's what I get from it. Great job there, damn it.
Thank you, everyone. I like the alliteration has gotten us running with romantic recollections, then muddled memories, and misty moments and misshapen mirrors. Nice touches with that. That second stanza kind of has you walking not the theme park, the fairgrounds where you walk into the Hall of Mirrors and you've got all the mirrors abounding before you, and each one offers you up a different view, a different shape to view yourself as. That kind of walks in that very same thought, as well as the warped wishing well of time and tide also kind of plays in that, but works on the thought of what you remember isn't always what is at the forefront of things. And that's where that outcast heart is, because you're looking back on things and trying to remember something better days, but misty moments, that reflection of what now is going on as opposed to what once was. Nicely done, Dave. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're coming back with you.
Well, nice comments, everybody. And hello, Gray Eyes. Welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Sorry, that elusive mute button was getting me. But hi, Joe. Hi, Ray. Hi, Fallon.
How are you?
Hello, Gray.
Hey, Gray.
Hi.
Hey. Gray, did you happen to hear Dave's phone?
I did, yeah. You can feel the rejection and the isolation through his words. It's quite palpable. You did a beautiful read on it, Rex.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right, Jean. We're back to you.
Okay, I'm going to read the next one, and this is by Jessica Z. It's called Electric Fingers. So let's. Her smile erupts like a solar flare. Eyes like a lust-filled electromagnetic pulse, frying my nociceptors in a flash, carrying me forward on an endorphin tsunami. Flippant hands take hers, eyes latching onto bottled moonlight pools, snaring like covert prey. In a breath, she's in my arms, hot skin radiant, Casablanca lilies blended with green bamboo hints, iced by bergamot. I breathe her in again. Tracing the contours of her neck, nose brushing lobe as hungry lips nibble perfumed skin. Her fingers run through my hair, tracing down the line of my neck, sending prismatic arcs down my spine, shorting neurons with fingers of sickle, lighting my darkness. End poem.
Oh, great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Fallon, we're going to start with you.
This is one of the prompts that I wrote to for Jessica Dee. And it really spoke to me because when she talks about the endorphin tsunami, you know, that's something that is very numbing. You know, the thing waves, and something just overtakes, just, you know, succumbs to everything. Just one big wave just takes you down, and yet you're still, you know, you're just emotionless. There's nothing there. It's numb. But then as it goes on, you know, the Casablanca lilies blended within the green bamboo hint. Everything her metaphors and her imagery is just spot on. So this is very seductive, but at the same time, very romantic and also mysterious in a way. So excellent light.
Thank you, Phil. Gray, how about you?
You know, I thought you did a wonderful job of capturing the essence of herself in her wording. You know, she paints almost an identical picture to her poem that she was inspired by. And I really liked all the metaphor and the scientific references as well. And it was a beautiful read, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And Laurent, how about you?
Normally, you're not going to get this much science in a in this type of poem, but it fits. A few of the words, I have no idea what a nociceptor is. I'm going to have to look that up. But and then she goes from that particular stanza right to reverent hands take hers, eyes latching on the bottled moonlight pools, which I think is great phrasing. The passage with ice by bergamot, I breathe her in again, is well done. And fingertip kisses, lighting my darkness, is a delightful way of describing a little bit of love play. It's really well done.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a beautiful piece like this. I thought it had wonderful imagery and it was loving and sensual. Very well penned. And it was great to have the opportunity to read that. And wonderful take on your prompt, Jess. I liked it. I thought that was really well done.
Excellent. Thank you. I like the language in here. That the endorphin tsunami was a nice touch. So was the adding ice by bergamot. There's such a nice tone of flavor in that. Offers up the sensuality in that stanza itself. Casablanca lilies blended with green bamboo hints. Iced by bergamot, I breathe her in again, tracing the contours of her neck. Nose brushing lobe with hungry lips, nibble perfume skin. Nice touch there. Kind of gives you that especially with the note to bergamot, you get that that essence of a really good tea and the sensation of flavors that roll in with that thought. And she hits on that snaring like cover to prey. That's a nice touch to grabbing what she wants in the moment. And the nociceptors are it's a sensory receptor for painful stimuli, like the noticing changes from cool environment to a hotter environment. It's something that the brain kicks into when those receptors are turned on, and you notice there might be a bit of danger, or, as she puts it, that solar flare kind of hits off the notion that, something has risen. Nicely done there, Jess. All right, Jean, they're coming back up to you.
Thanks so much, everybody. And
did I do great? Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
That's all right. And Fallon, I have the next one for you by Inner Sanctum.
Absolutely. Here we go. Inner Sanctum is called We Pass. An unquenched thirst rolls in the tumultuous oceans of her eyes, mirroring the ravenous, unsated hunger of her impatient lips, fervently awaiting the repast of a kiss.
Great read, Phil. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Beautiful read, Fallon. But, you know, you can feel the hunger and the thirst and the desire in this poem. It was a very good takeoff to Kissing My Soul by Jessica D. Beautiful, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Grant. Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a beautiful piece. And I thought it was an excellent reflection of the chosen prompt poem. Just beautiful. It was a brevity, but it was, it was well done, very well rounded out. So nice work, Inner Sanctum, and thank you so much. Excellent piece.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, what about you? What do you think? Laurent, you there?
He's on mute.
Yes, we got bit by the mute plug already. I agree completely with Gray. Hunger and thirst serve the tides of passion really well in this particular poem. The mirroring the ravenous, unsated hunger of her impatient lips, fervently awaiting the repast of a kiss. I just use the word repast. You wouldn't want to use dinner or breakfast. A repast is good. As is thought. Well done.
Thank you, Laurent. And, Belle, you got to read it. What about you?
I really like this because the unquenched thirst that is, you know, muddied by whatever the the tumultuous pace into her eyes. And basically, you know, you get lost in the color, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all settled. And then the mirroring of the ravishes unfaded, which is basically, you know, saying that the euphemism and the you know, that impatient hunger, you know, of the lips, and then the feverishly waiting the repass of a kiss, and just waiting for that one kiss, you're gonna repass it from between. You're gonna do it over and over again. It's very stunning, and it goes very well with "One Kissing My Soul" by Jessica B. Excellent job.
Thank you, Bill. Great comments, everybody. I agree with you. There's a nice intensity to this, especially that second line opening up. Royals in the tumultuous. There's a nice tone of voice hitting on the idea of how heavy is that moment. The ocean of her eyes, is that welling, you can see it. It's burning there. And then the mirroring, the ravenous, unsated hunger of her impatient lips, again, rolling on that second thought. And then again, rolling into fervently awaiting the repast of a kiss. That notice the intensity walks all the way down to the piece itself and offers itself up to, yo, now, nicely done, enter. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
All right. The next piece I have, I'm going to put up for a little while. This is by Pete Design. And I just have to, I put it down somewhere. Here we go. Okay, Laurent, whenever you're ready, this piece is called Wreckage of the Real.
Wreckage of the Real by Pee Wee Cusson. Stuck inside this wheel with nothing left to feel. Wreckage of the real is what you have left to steal. Walk through the door and hide away the hoard. Silk bleeds you more now. Bow down for your lord. Down in the floor. The pieces of sand that wash through his hands are born of the man and the van and his master plan. Smoke and crack while he attacks with a sack in the back. World long gone with the yawn of a prawn at dawn. He's taking away the things you'll say in the gray of a new day. Bow down for me again, and I think it's time, my friend. But will I ever bend? How does this misery end? Taking all you could see just to watch it bleed. Freed from the greed it needs to be diseased. Waking up once more on the floor. Gotta settle a score, rotten to the core. Pieces of sand washed through the hands of the man in the van with a master plan. Smoke and crack while he attacks with a sack in the back. He'll take away everything you'll say. Gray is the new day. Trapped inside the wheel, those things you feel you can never steal. Wreckage of the real. All wreckage of the wheel. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Sal, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I got a lot from this. It might be way off base, but maybe this is someone suffering from a disease of themselves, really. It's not a disease of being addicted to something. We're addicted to ourselves in our own specific ways, and that we all have this master plan of living life a certain way, and guess what? It's in the back of the damn van on the floor, and yet we're on our knees praying, God, give me the strength to get over this, but yet, you know, he's taken away all the things you see in gray of a new day, and that's just basically, you know, that's what God gives us, and then, you know, washing of the hands in the sand. It's basically you're just living off the land and not anything more than that. You don't have anything other than yourself and that van and probably the truck. So this is an excellent excellent poem. I like the repetitiveness of it. I think it really adds to it. It's very layered and very well written.
Thank you, Phil. And Gray, how about you?
You know, I like the metaphor in it. It's deep and powerful. Especially smoking crack while he attacks with a sack in the back, world long gone with the yawn of a prawn at dawn. And he's taking things, you'll say, in the gray of a new day. You know, just a deep and powerful poem. Well read, Laurent.
Thank you, Gray. And Jean, how about you?
Okay, well, I thought that this was a nicely penned piece. I thought it was an interesting take on the chosen prompt. Because that the piece by Jessica was very sensual. You know, so it was an interesting take on that. Not to say that he's wrong, but it was clever. And I thought he did a good job with it. So thanks to you for the help.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you, since you got to read it?
Well, in his AN, he mentions The Volcanic Lips by Jessica D as the prompt. And I said that volcanic lips imply a femme fatale, but women are not the only danger that we encounter in life. Smoke and crack while he attacks with a sack in the back. He'll take away everything you'll say. Gray is the new day. Now, he did stray from the prompt, I think, but who cares? The end result is the thing.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. The opening up on this, stuck inside this wheel with nothing left to steal, wreckage of the reel is what you have left to steal. Kind of hits on the hamster wheel. You're locked inside a motif you can't get out of, and there's nothing left to feel because of the motif you've already walked yourself into. Hide away the horde, still bleeding more now, bow down for your lord. The idea of your god is that uncontrollable desire to have more of that which you got. Smoke and crack while he attacks with a sack in the back. War long gone with the yawn of a prawn at dawn. The idea of prawn being just a small fish in a big ocean, and it's just another day. And what you're willing to give up and do for that bit of crack again and keep going that way and trapped inside the wheel, you don't really get out unless you get help or you really hit rock bottom. And the wreckage of the reel is the reality some live within, I guess. And you can never steal wreckage of the reel. All wreckage of the real. It's what people kind of get bent into sometimes, and they can't find a way out because they're locked inside that hamster wheel permanently. Nicely done, Huey. All right, Jean, we're coming back on you.
Nice insight, guys. Nice insight. Okay, great. That brings me to you. So, I have a piece by Alfred Masala, A Man and a Woman. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. A man, glowing with delight, neither despondent nor full of tears, he graces the steps he walks on, producing happiness, not tears. An ordinary lady with so much charm, her comeliness resides everywhere. Pride is not of her timid character. Her beauty is typical, her heart rare. The man laughs, declaring his cause. Anxiety vanishes, animosity ceases. Atmosphere changes for the better. His strong personality demands peace. A loving wife and mother is this lady. Upon her head, responsibility is true. Giving her family full blessing and care, her reward in the afterlife is due. How many of these persons truly exist? Highest praise for the esteemed lady, giving great admiration for the man, unless they're shambling, worn, and shady. End poem.
Great read, Gray. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we kick it off with you, please?
I kind of like this. He starts off giving us a man glowing with delight, and an ordinary lady with so much charm, her comeliness resides everywhere. These are people to admire. All the way through that into the third and the fourth stanza, anxiety vanishes, animosity ceases, and the loving wife and mother giving her family full blessing and care. Her reward in the afterlife is due. And then he asks the question, how many of these persons truly exist? These are perfect people. And I got such a kick out of the last line, which kind of says, You know, I really like you guys. I got a lot of admiration for the two of you, unless you're both just a couple of sleazeballs. So he did a good job of that. Turned it all around at the end.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was nicely penned. I thought it was a very tender and loving piece. And I thought he did a great job. So thank you for sharing Alfred Rosello, also known as Poetry Cures My Soul. Thank you very much. Must be Halloween week or coming up on Halloween. Everybody's got costumes on.
Thank you, Jean. Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
I enjoyed the cadence to the right. You know, it had a great flow to it. And, you know, I like the message in there that, you know, be good and be true, you know, unless you're shambling, worn and shady. And, you know, true is that, right? You know, but we all have to stand up and face life one step at a time. And as a man or a woman, and, you know, we all have these battles to carry on, but you can't lay down and let the battle take you over. So just a beautiful poem on the subject of living life in its best.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. All right, Felon, we're on to you. What do you got?
I just want to know where they found a family of unicorns at, because let me tell you what, that's especially the woman with prom. You're right. And that had kids and I got a husband. Ain't happening. Very, very, very few and far between. Usually popping tears to say that calm without anxiety and keep people calm. Ain't happening, seriously. It's excessive wise for sure, if anything. So, but I do like this. It is good hope that, you know, it's basically saying if one does want one thing, you're going to pull the strength out of another, and together you will be able to sail, you know, smoothly through life and have a loving, meaningful relationship and offer them a mentorship to your children so they can have the same life and feel that of another mate. So this is, it is beautiful. At the same time, I'd like to find that unicorn myself.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you. I like the duality off of the first two stanzas, kind of walk in that notion of they haven't met yet. And then the next two stanzas walk in that arena of them having meet and they're a better for it. Anxiety vanishes, animosity ceases for him. And then a loving wife and mother in this lady, upon her head, responsibility is true. So they've kind of gotten into each other. And the back end is, there's almost a pun in the back end of this. How many of these persons truly exist? Highest praise for the esteemed lady, giving great admiration for the man, unless they're shambling, worn, and shady. Kind of offers up that notion, is this real? Or is this just for us to see on the outside? So what's really going on behind? Nicely done there, poetry. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, Rex, well, that's going to bring me back to you with a piece by Daniel Duchino called Gaia.
Okie dokie. Gaia by Daniel Duchino. I am a child in the playground of the human habitat, design and engineering to guide and direct with a promise to serve and protect. Yet cruelly the cage is opaque, glass and plastic. Does a fish dream of what's beyond the tank? Does a hamster wonder if the plastic tube can break? And of the bird whose beak fits through the bars, how much it squawks or cries? I am a child, as all children are children born to children, destined to bear children, who dares to define adulthood? I am a child. There are times when all bonds are shattered and the mother's love is all that remains. Of paintings I feel, of nature I am, of music I emote, of birdsong I understand. In house I shelter, but among the trees I breathe. Sometimes I open glass windows. Sometimes I go beyond the plastic purgatory. Sometimes I am done with the games and the playgrounds, and I rest and sit quiet in mother's arms. And poem. All right, Gray, let's start with you, please.
Excellent read, Rex. And I like the poem. You know, it speaks to being a child at heart, you know, and being sick of the games of the playground and then just finding comfort in your mother's arms, which is a beautiful thing. Too bad we couldn't carry that all the way through life. But, yeah, it's just a beautiful poem.
Thank you, Gray. And, Bell, how about you?
Oh, I love this. Daniel knocked it out of the park. It just opens you up to the juvenile play that we have in our heart and in our mind, and that sometimes we get locked up in that program of life and being an adult and our responsibilities and what we have to do, and we get trapped in the wheel of work. You know, it's a constant. It's a repetitive. Just running, and yet we're still not necessarily getting anywhere. That you can always go back to the memories of being a child and what it was to be playful and carefree, and yet, you know, our parents instill certain things within us as children, and then we can carry those in as adults. So that's what I got from that. And I'll rest and sit and quiet in my mother's arms. To me, that's just taking a deep breath and what his mother was to him. So it's an absolute stunning poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. All right, Laurent, what about you? What do you think?
From nature held captive to the freedom of the wild, Van voices the pleasant unpleasantness of keeping a creature captive for one's own pleasure, describing the inside world, describing the outside world. Sometimes I open glass windows. Sometimes I go beyond the plastic purgatory. Sometimes I am done with the games in the playgrounds, and I rest and sit quiet in Mother's arms. I thought it was a wonderful tribute to Mother Gaia, and I enjoyed the truth of us as children of children, bearing children. Great job.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, again, yeah, this is a great take on that prompt, which was the image prompt. And I think he took it somewhere that was wonderful. You know, the simplicity of a child's perspective. You know, and then when he went down, does a fish dream of what's beyond the sea? Does a hamster wonder if the plastic tube can break? And there's an innocence to all of that. I mean, because it's not something that they think about, you know. They're there. They are where they are, doing what they're doing. And that's what's important. They live in the moment and in that place without worry or care. You know, what does it be, the lily of the field or the sparrow of the sky? They have no fear. You know, I mean, it's kind of the simplicity of that. And I like that. And I thought Stan did a great job.
Wonderful comments, everybody. I think you got everything out of this. There is a note to simplicity in this, and it kind of hints at those notions of the need to get away from that which troubles, gives us angst, just keeps us worrying about things, and that desire to go back to that little touch of notes, going back to childhood, going back to nature, outside playing. The thought, even if he offers up the notes for plastic purgatory, sometimes I'm done with the games in the playgrounds. Playgrounds can be the office buildings, as well as a reference to many other arenas along that edge. So the idea, as Jean just pointed out, of running it through a child's eyes, remembering that we are all children of this earth. And the fact is, sometimes you just need to get back to the simplicity and be within that realm once more, as that picture depicts, this nice, peaceful, and calm surroundings, which brings a note of peace to oneself in the moment, because you're breathing free once more. Nicely done, Dan. All right, Jean, we're coming up back to you.
Well, Sally, I have one for you, and this is by Kiku, called
okay.
The Things We Carry.
Let me see. All righty. And this is Akiku, and it's called The Things We Carry. Things that loaded up, it's taking the time. Here we go. The Things We Carry. Arctic lines and steps over bleached skies, silence left open-ended for us to fill in with spaces. But over the shoulders of the weather, our parting was unveiled unexpectedly, like the sea at the turn of harpin, slipping gold against the horizon's brow.
for our after-mirror images to the globe just once more, is what we carry with our hands. How much, how long, how far is the road we walk? Perhaps everyone is headed home. Underneath the warmth of powdery bronze, we here I stand on this gravel path, converting from the once simple and ordinary. Though the weary sun is an early sleeper, it reminds us we've worked hard today. I fill the envelope with the closing verse, and I let go, hearing in poem.
Great read, Phil. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed something. Which one are we doing?
The things we carry.
Okay,
I'll come
I'm
back
sorry.
To you.
Yes,
that's all right. Gene, why don't we start with you, please? Gene? Two for two. All right, Gray, let's start with you.
Okay. That was a great read, Phil. But, you know, I enjoyed the poem. You know, it has beautiful imagery. You know, it's that first stanza, urgent lines unsheathed over bleached skies, silence left open-ended for us to fill in its spaces. But over the shoulders of the weathered, our parting wasn't veiled unexpectedly, like the sea at the turn of a hairpin, clipping gold against the horizon's brow, for your after images to glow just once more. Yeah, just beautiful imagery and fantastic emotion as well. But it was beautifully read, Phil, as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
All right, Phil, you got to read it. What about you? What did you think?
I was going to tell you this. I was overtaken by the beginning, just along, you know, the speaking of the silvery lines of, you know, the moon that over, you know, bleached the skies, basically. You're just saying the dim of the moon in itself, it glows. It lit up the sky, and it filled all the spaces and stuff, and then it clipping of the gold against the horizon brow, which is basically the sun that's rising, and that they carry the new day upon them. They carry what is even along the gravel path. It doesn't matter how poor or the things we have in life, we still have the day of a good gift of the new day. So this is what I get from it. We always consider the next day with us. So excellent light.
Thank you, Phil. I just got a note. We have Victoria on the phone. Are you there, Vicky?
Hi.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah. Hello, hello. How is everyone?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Can I steal the spotlight and give a comment, Rex?
Absolutely. Have at it.
So what I think I really like about this is that it kind of starts off with this gentle appreciation of nature. You know, and I could read the whole verse all over again, and I guess I'm kind of going to, but ardent lines unsheathed over blank, bleached skies, silence left open-ended for us to fill in this space. But over the shoulders of the weathered, our parting was unveiled unexpectedly, like the sea at the turn of a hairpin, clinging gold against horizon's brow of our after images to glow just once more. What I find beautiful about that is that it's this gentle appreciation of the moment. And it really talks about the setting of the sun. But then the second portion of this poem really goes into not so much the appreciation of this final moment, again, backlit by the end of the day, but really this rumination upon life, upon the path that we walk, upon the moments that seem to slip by and the finality that can come. And yet, even as this kind of wraps up, you know, returning to the gravelly kind of path, which kind of reminds me of the grave every time I think of gravel. I don't know why. It's just the dull gray, the gravel paths typically aren't something that you think of as exciting, just these dull gray hodgepodge of rocks that have hit against each other enough to create a light layering of dust. Even in all of this mundanity, as people are closing their verses, they are going to carry on to the orange. They are going to carry on to a new day. They are not ending their path in this moment, just because it might be hard, just because they might want to say, that's enough, I'm done, the day is coming. And so I like how the first stanza kind of ends with the dawning of the day, or the dusk of the day. And then, of course, the second stanza actually begins new again, that dawning, that beautiful light, the idea of hope and something more than just midnight rumination. So really, really stunning poetry with absolutely beautiful imagery.
I like that. I walked a little differently because that the middle of that first stanza, but over the shoulders of the weathered, our parting was unveiled unexpectedly, like the sea at the turn of a hairpin. That had me thinking of parting of a couple in the moment. The hairpin is like that big drop off in the moment, and that the thought with the finish, our act images to glow just once more, is that that notion, damn, wish we just had a little bit more of what we once had, because it's gone at this moment. And then the carryover into the second angle was what we carry with our hands, how much, how long, how far is the road we walk, that idea of how far, how long do we carry that baggage of something we once cherished, which is now gone, and the idea of rolling it to the back end, carrying the orange, is that notion, I can't let it bear beat me down to the point where I can't appreciate anything or look forward to what comes next. So I like your interpretation there, Vic. Laurent, how about you?
It's a beautiful piece. The second line in the first stanza is absolutely splendid. Silence left open-ended for us to fill in its spaces. He knows, he understands silence. He understands the awkwardness that exists when you've got to fill that silence in. But the second stanza, I think, is the more powerful one, because it is so absolutely human. He understands the sounds. He also understands people. How much, how long, how far is the road we walk? And he stands on a gravel path, coveting for the once simple and ordinary. Things have gotten complex and gotten a little nuts. And one does often pine in the middle of that kind of thing for the very simple, the very ordinary, something that doesn't hurt to think about it. Really well done piece.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Gray, how about you? Are you mutating?
Sorry, yes, I was. but I like it. You know, Fallon did a wonderful job of reading the poem. But, you know, it speaks to being able to let go and not carry that weight that life would have you carry. You know, I always said as a kid growing up that, you know, life will crap on your shoulders and expect you to carry it, but you just got to let it slide off and, you know, it'll clear itself eventually. And so, you know, it's just a fantastic about a poem on the subject of staying strong in life. And, you know, being able to let go.
Thank you, Gray. And Jean, are you back?
I just got here. Are we still in the same poem as when I left?
Yeah.
Thank goodness. My daughter borrowed my charger tonight, and I never put my phone back on it. So needless to say, I went the way of the wind. But I'm back. And we're good. So, okay, so I'm ready to put up another poem. Is that where I'm going? I'm a little confused.
Sure.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I had this all plotted out until I took a detour. Okay. Yes. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this one by Cedar Chapman.
All righty.
And here we go.
This is called Dark Sorrow. Am I all that is to be, an appraiser from afar, never to shine bright, a lone dead star, left only to walk on hardened bone, to feel the warmth of another man's glory, 5 words to strike on marble stone, my life, my final story. I scribble and scribe in dark hours of night, so to lift you to our dreams of morrow, where winds nudge sails and doves take flight. Yet dwell do I this deep, dark sorrow. How my thoughts betray me to find the light. I scribble and write to escape my plight. Yet words won't flow to let all beloved know, and oh, of all thoughts that I have stowed, if only I could let my beloved know. She would know. Yes, she should know. I'm a man with no home, not a homeless soul, born of love from heavens above, cast down below like an aberrant troll. But if only a few minutes that I may borrow to set aside this deep, dark sorrow, hold tight my hands so we may follow the mellow trail of a brighter morrow. Let us go. Let us go. Let us go. The autumn breeze blows gently past the wood and brass of glass doors. Words that matter sit soaked, scattered on dried, a gray bud. Excuse me. On dried gray mud and dead oak floors. Drunk patrons patter with famed impasse. Gents chill and chatter with monocle glass. They march on through, blind and fast. Their fine leather boots trample the paths. Oh, but you walk so airy in the candlelight. I fumble my pen with humble might, mumbling my song in the dreary night, as words interleave to weave a puzzle. It cleaves my will like a wild dog muzzle, stuttering, fluttering. My tongue succumbs. I cry out to angels for words to come. What maketh a man who ponders numb? But nay, I sit as David sits, unfit of any poet's wit, this sickening hole, an endless pit. Alas, I sleep on these pebbly streets, tired and glassy-eyed, the reek of alleys from weeks and weeks doused with whiskey rye. Street lanterns flicker a futile flame. It casts above me a shadowy blank. My fame, my story, my lackluster glory, all in my dead father's name. Still you casually stroll by night after day, a shilling and sixpence tossed my way, a subtle glance, an endearing smile, the scent of jasmine. Yet all that while I curl and huddle, scarf befuddled, my face so hideous, my stench so vile, in flittering darkness, my scent beguiled, my sight beguiled. The new dawn brings a brighter morrow, the monies of which I've sorely borrowed. Another drink, some Indian ink, and you, milady, shall surely follow my final chapter, my deepest, darkest sorrow. And poem, and I wish to hell I could find my glasses.
Great reader, Rob. Thank you very much. And Victoria, why don't we start with you, please? What do you think?
I'm actually really glad that you picked me to start, because I'm stupidly excited about this poem. It's a poemception. It's like a poem within a poem within a poem. It tells this tale, kind of a depth of character. You get the feeling of the love or the potential love. You get the feeling of the environment or the ambiance. And then, of course, you get the character, the main character, this homeless person, also their portrayal. But they've done it in such a beautiful way that you could actually break the stanzas up. So there's a tilde in the first stanza, the third stanza, sixth stanza, and ninth stanza. And if you read just those stanzas, it reads as its own unique poem. Just as if you read the ones without any kind of indentations, it creates the ambiance. So I scribble and scribe in dark hours of night, so to lift you to our dreams of morrow, where wind nudge sails and doves take flight, yet dwell do I this deep dark sorrow. And then jumping down three stanzas, or two stanzas, It kind of has an indent. It's okay. The autumn breeze just gently past the wood and brass of stained glass doors, woods and matter, so on and so forth. But each of them has that. And then, of course, we have these ones that are all indented at the end. And that's, of course, always about the love. What I find incredible about this is if you read his story, if you read this main character's story by itself, there is that darkness, there is that sadness, there's that depression and dwelling. And it really kind of imbues this idea of hopelessness that this person is feeling. They understand that they're not delighted, a delight of society. They're not up par with what is expected from society. They are just kind of stuck in this place, trying to figure out their worth, figure out their place. All the while, we have these people who are just bypassing him, walking by, maybe someone throws in a sixpence. You know, for the most part, it shows how detached from society he is as he sits there, the watcher, trying to figure out what is going on, where his place is, why he has been forgotten. And then, of course, we have the beauty of this woman, and it goes into her scent. It goes into the hope for tomorrow. It goes into the light and the brightness, and it kind of is like that image when you see, and I actually, the first one I think of is like Dracula, the movie that came out mid-early 2000s, I think it was, but it shows him wandering around the city, and all of a sudden the clouds kind of part a little bit, and the light shines down on this woman that looks just like his wife who died. And this really has that feel to it. It has that beauty to it of having embedded stories, having a poem about this beautiful woman while also a poem about the complexity of sorrow and darkness and depression that perhaps someone who's shunned by society has, and yet also a telltale of satire against the way that our society acts like we care and yet so often we don't. So I think this is really a stunning work, and I am always amazed at poets that can write like this. I would love to craft something like this. And I'm sure we all could with enough time, but for it to flow so effortlessly between these three poems with the stanzas intermingled with each other, to me is such a beautiful testament to the poetic ability of Cedar Chapman, because it's flawless, it's beautiful, and yet it's so deeply complex that you can really dig into it and sit and ruminate. I'd argue one of the first things I did was actually read just the Tilde lines. And there's some really dark, beautiful depths in there, especially ending with that idea of like the India ink, which is a very, very dark. It's one of the darkest pigment inks that you can get. And it stains the skin and it's waterproof, so it doesn't wash off. And so even that, just reading the Tildes, creates a very dark, beautiful depth of a poem. And so I think that this is actually far more complex than reaches the eye initially. And I think that it deserves a far deeper dive than maybe what we could even do on the show, but it is masterful.
Excellent. Thank you, Victoria. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, I'd like to, ditto what Victoria said and add that Lauren did a beautiful read with it.
Oh, absolutely. Belle, how about you?
Well, I got a whole different interpretation of this poem. For me, it's more metaphorically speaking of the man that he could not find a home within himself. You know, when it goes to the script, you know, that's here where the glass, but the stained glass, to me, a man at home with a homeless, where's this thing about the glass? Anyway, there's something about some stained glass and the floors are wooden. To me, that's the spirituality within itself that, you know, that is broken as well. And then the sixpence that was stones him, the toss of the coins, is just that somebody's 2 cents worth of advice and how to find himself and to find where he belongs. And, you know, he is just a stench of himself, and he does live on the road. He does live on the streets of what, you know, of wherever he thinks he was trying to fit in, but he just hasn't found himself yet. And he gets intoxicated to what's around him and takes upon, you know, with other people like himself. And, you know, you just sit at the bar and you just drink your life away. That's what I gather from it. I might be way off, but it's very in-depth and very layered. Excellent job.
Nice, Belle. Thank you very much. And Laurent, you got to read. What about you?
Well, it's hard to fault Victoria's interpretation and her comments, but saying that, I also absolutely agree with Felon. If you take a look at the stanza, I'm a man with no home, not a homeless soul, born of love from heavens above. this is not somebody who was it was born unwanted. And like someone says, he has never found a home within himself. He sits on the street, back to the building, and gives us insight into his day, what he sees, what he thinks, because this is, after all, my life, my final story. And he writes in the dark hours of night, and in those hours, it tells us about being a man with no home. The woman who walks by is, I think, incidental, somebody who just happens to pass by and gives him a moment of happiness with a smile and a small donation. It's hard to pick out anything that is the most powerful stanza, but I think probably the penultimate one, where he curls and huddles, scarf befuddled, a face so hideous, stench so vile, my sight beguiled. That's a clever rhyme, good use of the word as well. This is a heck of a piece, like Victoria said, quite complex.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you? Are you new taking?
Yes, of course I was, because, you know, that's what happens when I get pressed. Wonderfully deep and touching, right? And I thought the thoughts were so well expressed in this. I think that Peter Chapman has a very mighty pen, and I appreciate those rights very much when they come to us on Friday night. Excellent job, as always. Thank you, Peter.
Great comments, everybody. And Victoria, you did quite the in-depth thought on this. I got to agree with you. With only maybe a thought, he's written this kind of in a tone of three different people, yet all those people are him. He's done it as the thought of looking down on himself, being inside himself, and also being outside himself. So he gets three perspectives of viewpoints to offer up, because he does offer himself up as this nasty, smelly mess at one point, but he also offers himself up as that deep and dark, troubled poet that you might have found in Ginsberg's Howl. But it also walks on another thought. If you brought forth 150 years, you might look at this and view it as something Edgar Allan Poe would write in this day and age. So well done there, Sita. This is really good. And just like everybody says, nicely complex as well. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, well, that gray, that's going to bring me to you, and this is a piece called Fighting Me by DJGS117. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. Fighting Me by DJGS117. The bottle, a throttle, herd of cattle, colossal, vault apostle, hollow, coddle. Encoding, capture, rapture, impact, but unwrapped, ignoring, destroying, hoping, crowning, King Louis, I'm not sure what the number is, XVI,
15.
Intrigued, fatigued, repeat, future, foreseen, incomplete, obsolete, the creep, retreat, bleak, a leak, incomplete, street, a shriek, discreet, unneeded, wishing, it seemed, and home.
Great read there, Gray. Thank you very much. And Phil, why don't we start with you, please?
I don't know you're going to do that to me.
I don't know.
I was reading the author's notes, and he says, you know, I try to add hidden details in the pieces. But for me, just overall, without seeing that and what he was saying, to me, this is somebody that's fighting certain things in their life. You know, they go from having, you know, the intact to the unwrapped to the ignoring to the destroying, hoping and crowning. You know, it basically, you know, becoming a king, there's the complexities of the the cons of it, you know, because there's nothing discreet. There's, you know, you can be wishing to do this, but then, you know, things are bleak. You got the whole world on your shoulder, your whole country or whatever. So this is just, I think, it's a unique take in poetry, and I'd like to see more from this poet. That's it.
Thank you, Phil. And Gray, how about you?
It was an interesting style. You know, I think he got his point across with it. You know, I like to double entendres to the different aspects of the right. And, yeah, it was a pleasure to read. So, beautifully done.
Thank you, Gray. And Laurent, how about you?
Very interesting piece. I read it 3 or 4 times trying to put the words together into some kind of a story, which the story may not exist, but it does seem as if each word generates the next word and does make sense. False apostle, hollow coddle, encoding capture, rapture, intact. All of those follow each other quite logically. You can put them in any context you want. So it's difficult to do what he attempted to do here in this poem, but I think he succeeded. Well done.
Thank you, Laurel. And Vic, how about you?
Oh, Victoria dropped. Correct. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right, Jean, we're coming to you.
You do that every time I tell you somebody dropped. See how you are to me? Anyway,
yeah,
I thought it was a great breath. Yeah, it was an intriguing piece and well done. So thanks for sharing with us tonight, DJ. Nice work.
Thank you very much. This is capitalized all the way through, except fatigue and repeat kind of gives notion to that idea of a wash, rinse, repeat. That's sort of a, where is it? Obsolete, the creep, retreat, bleak, a leak, incomplete. It's kind of a notion from, you're looking at Louis XVI here, but it's kind of the idea of you bring it forward. It's that idea of never learning from history, but the repeat notion walks in on itself, and it kind of hits on that idea, wishing it's seen. Hey, you know what? Is there a beheading in here somewhere? Nicely done, DJ. Thank you very much. And Gene, we're coming back to you.
Okay, Rex, I'm bringing the next one to you, and this is by Rhyme Draven, and it's called Even When It Hurts.
Okay. Even When It Hurt by Rhyme Draven. She told her stories in small, blissful bursts. She kept those faces smiling, eagerly waiting for more, more of her and them. Impatiently brewing their eyes left and right, grinding their teeth, not to fight, but in bitter display of their excited states. I enjoyed those tales of past and present, a mishmash of mistakes, preaching nothing but the joy of listening with open mouths, ears, and eyes, training the senses to dream without sleep or fear of unknowns. With our feet toasting by the gentle flames and dried up wood piles, waiting in line for their turn to serve, we found ourselves grinning, dreaming with her. Between tales of warriors and forgotten heroes, we flexed our memories to absorb the words and willfully classify our thoughts for a future without her. At her tale's end, when all logs were spent, our eyes would drift under drunken lids. There, we found her standing tall, forever waving us on, a clear call for us to keep going, even when it hurts. And we always did. And poem. Thank you, Jean. Phil, why don't we start with you, please?
Of course. I don't know if there's a prompt that goes with this, or it's just a free write or open write. It's just birds of cliche. She told her story.
The prompt was one of
Hmm?
The prompt is one of Enchain's poems.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. At all. Joe, this is something that would actually go. This is something with Joe. She told her stories in small, blissful bursts. She kept those smiling faces eagerly. And then it goes down to more. It's almost like somebody was a servant or somebody that maybe led people on that, you know, they were not so fortunate to have things in life that, you know, that the rich could have. And that this person basically kept the momentum up and kept the morale up around them. And even within the you know, the drunken nights and the fires that are going out and such, I might be way off, but that's what I get. That's a mentor that lifts them up and still rises above whatever puts them down. So this is just a nice ride and probably a very great rendition of something of Joe's.
Excellent. So thank you very much. You're on the right track. Gray, how about you?
I like it, you know. It had this reverence, you know, and acknowledgement of somebody that's so special in their lives that they just had to capture that beauty. And, you know, this person taught them to keep going even when it hurt, as the title so aptly captured. So, yeah, just a powerful and stunning poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought it was an incredible piece and very well put together. And, you know, I really enjoy Rhyme's work all the time, so there's nothing unusual about that to me. I love the way he puts his words out there. You know, he's not, I don't know, it always leaves something hanging in the background. And I think that's what I like best about his work. It's not all up front. It's just lingering there, and you have to kind of put it together. And that's what I appreciate. So nice work, and thank you very much for sharing with us.
Okay. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a tale of a very special person, and some of us are lucky enough to have somebody like that in their lives. She sounds so appealing, and what a gift she gives to others. I enjoyed those tales of past and present, a mishmash of mistakes, preaching nothing but the joy of listening with open mouths, ears, and eyes, training the senses to dream without sleep or fear of unknowns. This is extremely well written. There's an innate understanding of what the mental context is to be able to dream without sleep or fear of unknowns. There's no art to it. You can daydream with no specific focus, or you can dream with focus and create something within that. Very, very evocative of the character that she's writing about.
Excellent, Ron. Thank you very much. Gray, you offer that note to reverence. You're spot on with that because it does, opening up, she told her stories in small, blissful bursts. So I'm getting an older lady, probably a grandmother, and telling tales to the kids around. Hits on that note with our feet toasting by the gentle flames and dried up wood piles waiting in line for their turn to serve. We found ourselves grinning, dreaming with her. The idea of what we used to do back in the day was gather around fireplaces and bonfires outside, telling tales, remarking on the time, and still letting those tales illuminate and move forth in a generation. And it gets down to that. And will she classify our thoughts for a future without her? So it's also about death, knowing it's coming, and she's still regaling them in the notion of the beauty of her words. Even though she might falter here and there, it doesn't matter. She captivates them. So I call this, is like a living memento mori for this beloved woman, because, as I said, a clear call for us to keep going even when it hurts, and we always did. So it's a tribute piece to one who meant so much. So nicely done, Ryan. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, you're coming up. Back up to you.
You know, well, the next one I'm going to put up is we're getting into the carryovers from the Banjo Lynn show on Tuesday. So, Fallon, I have this piece for you. It's called I Never Knew the Kitchen Clock Required So, I don't know, by Tom Tiller. It ended there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is by Tom Tiller. It's a tribute to Banjo. I never knew the kitchen clock required so pleading. Like the clock in the kitchen, I'll find myself forever replacing your battery. While you never ask, how was it for you? I switch on the radio thinking of you, wash cups at the kitchen sink while listening to the phone and chat. And a caller sounds like you. I wonder, do voices that sound the same think the same, act the same? Are they all cliche of socks in bed? Leave breakfast items out for the whole day as if waiting for them to return from work. I smile, not sure if it's a sad or a happy thought that brings my mouth to curl. Just that. I had a brief image of you at work eating breakfast with only your socks on. Then I ask myself, would you have noticed? I don't think you see the cracks in our ceiling when looking between the moans and the tired expectations. I don't think you hear the creak of the floorboards worn from the repetitive picking up, dusting, and sweeping. To yet another fresh start. Another letting go, the idea that love somehow got lost amongst the cobwebs and the dirty linen piling up like thoughts of resentment on a bonfire of a one-sided giving. Listening to the clock, reverberating it secondhand. Around tiled floors and walls of our kitchen, the visual of coming home, walking up the path like nothing in the world hurts you. I simultaneously want to chuck a saucepan and hug you, hoping to hear words that, at the very least, feign any interest. And yet, like the clock, you inform me of time and remind me of your plans, where you will be after showering and changing your clothes, and I sit at the table hearing myself say words, rhythmically, the tick, tock, tock, tick. Have a nice time, dear. End point. Ooh, I kill him.
Great read, Dan Fowl. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off, please?
Sure. In the AN, she says this is an attempt to emulate Banjo Lynn's style, and I thought that she pretty much succeeded in this work. It's conversational, which I always enjoy, and the poet uses just the everyday items that are in any given room to tell the story, the clock in the kitchen, the radio that you listen to while washing cups at the kitchen sink and listening to the phone, the cliche of socks in bed, cracks in the ceiling, the creak of the floorboards, all the things that you might expect to hear from perhaps an older house are utilized to tell the story. The remembrance of her friend, the tone of it is not melancholy, it's not particularly sad, but I find it very profound. I was perhaps looking for something a little bit a little more like Banjo Lynn in terms of an expletive or something, a rude way of saying something, but no, and that's fine. She did a very, very good job.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think that it was a wonderful write by Tom Tiller. I think he did a fine job with the piece, and I think Banjo would be pleased. I do. So wonderful work, and thank you, Tom Tiller, as always.
Thank you, Gene. And Gray, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I liked the piece. It had a wonderful air of and essence of Bandolin's writing and style, so I appreciated that greatly. And so it was just a powerful tribute poem to our beloved Bandolin.
Excellent. Thank you, Gray. And Belle, how about you, since you got to read it?
Well, he wouldn't be leaving nothing but one that one time, I promise you that. She left home all day long just with her thoughts. And, you know, thinking, does he really, you know, she thinks of him on so many different things, and she wants to know, does he ever think of her? Does he even notice, you know, he comes in, but then he leaves. There's so many things that are unkept at home, most importantly, her. You know, the socks in the bed is just basically probably where he gets caught in the middle of the night and takes the socks off and just leaves them at the bottom of the bed. Had that happen to him, too. And it only happened once or twice to one certain person. But, and then he just leaves, you know, things out. He leaves for breakfast, he just leaves, whatever. He don't care. He knows that he's going to take care of him. But yet the depression of her and the, you know, the depression of being not loved and wanted and needed the way that she's supposed to be just kind of leaves the house, you know, a lie. And that she, you know, even she's just at the house. She creeps and she cracks. And, you know, and she even hears a ticking in her own chest that, you know, Thomas is ticking by while he's out having, doing whatever he's doing. And she's just left, the, you know, full of resentment. So she's just a very, very clever, right? And, I mean, it just, and if you've ever been married and been on the female side of it, this would just really tick and talk to you. So excellent, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. I found this really, really good. Heavy on the irony, a satire of her life, it being one-sided, and lots of notes to dry humor dropped in. I find myself forever replacing your batteries while you never ask, how is it for you? And I had a brief image at work eating breakfast with only your socks on. Then I asked myself, would you have noticed? Some really great thoughts that roll within this. It's a fascinating piece that paints drudgery on her point, yet it's a quiet drudgery taken in and offering up that that wry humor and the heaviness on the irony. So nicely done, time. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, first I want to say hello, Selena.
Hello, everyone. How are you all?
Hey, Selena.
Hi.
Hey, Selena.
Hi, everybody.
Rex, I have to ask you, we're going to have to get into, I guess, maybe three comments. We got a ton of poetry still. And I still have everybody from the line, so I'd just like to get through some of it. So,
all right, I'll back that down and get the three on the phone here to help us out.
Okay. That'll be awesome. Okay, and Laurent,
cool.
I have the next one.
All right. Refresh. All right, this is called Mandy and the Wind by Vincent. They won't ever know who we are when we break, when we tumble as lonely stars. Amanda of the crystal green eyes, generations that pull us down. That first morning, my world disappeared. You carry me, listless, in the praying wind for all to see. Winter eyes open, your images to me, there by the rose light. Lead me, gentle muse, deep into those places. A season stirs. Would you come along? Circles cover our words into silences, voices I've never heard. By the river, the land crossed over, copain, copain. To your name always, wind updrafts, stirs, carried silently, friend, into night. That wind, we know, we know. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Delina, since you just came in, let's start with you, please.
Right. Okay, then. Well, this is very beautiful, of course. And I love the start of this. They won't ever know who we are when we break, when we tumble as lonely stars. The imagery is very vivid. And, you know, you feel what this person felt for Mandy, whether she was a friend or whatever she was. You can feel the emotion in the whole piece, and it's just lovely. Yeah, I really love this piece very much.
Thank you, Selena. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was just a wonderful write, skillfully read as well, Lauren. But, you know, The imagery is fantastic. You know, the first morning my world disappeared, you carried me listless in the prying wind for all to see. Winter eyes opened your images to me there by the rose light. And then, you know, to me it speaks of a friendship, a beautiful friendship that, you know, is still on its journey and hasn't finished. That wind we know, as if they're being carried aloft into the future. But I thought it was a wonderful poem of friendship.
Excellent, Greg. Thank you. And Sal, how about you?
Oh, I love this. I think this is a very, I think it's more of a romantic piece because, you know, where it goes, a copian, that means boyfriend. So your name always wins a dress and serves, carried slightly soon into the night. The wind, we know. And to me, that is saying that, you know, wherever this person goes, whether it be this life or afterlife, they're always going to be there. They'll be stirred up and it's almost like they become a season together. So this is a very beautiful light, and I enjoyed it a great deal.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. And Laurent, since you got to read it, what about you?
Well, it's brief, and it's... I swear to God, I'm missing words tonight. The wind that they know together, the wind that is shared, is something unique unto them. Two friends, one gone, leaving one behind who is struggling, obviously. That first morning, my world disappeared. You carry me listless in the praying wind for all to see. Speaks of the wind again. And the phrasing is quite lovely. Winter eyes open your images to me there by the rose light. It has a tone that is so peaceful and so certain and so emotional. Beautifully done.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, that brings me to Gray. Gray, I have a piece for you by Dan Ellison. And there you are, whenever you're ready.
Okay, this is called Carnivore Lope. Poetry without abandon, free spirit of the earth. Instinct, wild and random, lets none define her worth, chaotic as a whirlwind, lioness without pride. Her words, razors that rend, will rip you up inside. Muses open horizons, uses prose as scenery, rhythm a rolling stride as she roars her. End poem.
Excellent read there, Gray. Thank you very much. And Phil, let's start with you, please.
Wow, what a beautiful way to pay tribute to Banjo, because you know her writings. I didn't know her. I never came across her, but after seeing her passing, I did go back and read some of her writings, and I was just wow, taken back. I mean, her pen was mighty, 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 and it just filled as raw emotion and despair, and yet, you know, worth facing life. And I don't think she really had the talent that she really had, because she ripped me up inside, and her words were amazing. I was just impressed thoroughly, and wow, I wish you could have heard this, because she does roar. Excellent, excellent.
Thank you, Phil. And Laurent, how about you?
I love the standout phrase, let's none define her worth. And that was Banjo Lynn all over, from what I gathered from comments and people who knew her. Chaotic as whirlwind, lioness without pride. And that's important, because if you're prideful, it can kind of spoil your, well, I don't want to say spoil your image, but it's not really being honest. But if you just have certainty in yourself, a certitude, a knowledge of who you are, well, that's entirely different. I love the ending as she roars her. She roars herself. And the self is silent. Great piece. Great piece.
Thank you, Laura. And Delina?
yes, sorry. I didn't know Banjalin or her work, to be perfectly honest. But this is a beautiful tribute piece. And, you know, you can learn a lot about the poet just from reading this brevity. I always say that I admire people who write brevity because they get so much into such a short piece. And this tells us a lot about this person, even if you didn't know her. You know, the lines that Laurent picked up on, the lioness without pride, you know, tells us there was no arrogance, no ego in her or her work, which, again, from comments I've read, like Laurent, she was quite an amazing poet, and I really need to go back and read some of her work, I think. But just a wonderful tribute piece. Very beautiful, yes. Well done.
Excellent, Leah. Thank you. And Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
I liked it, you know. It was reverential and endearing, you know. You can feel her in his right, that he's speaking to her and about her. And I thought his right was well done as well, especially chaotic as a whirlwind, lioness without pride. Her words, razors that rend, will rip you up inside. You know, like her writings were powerful and did definitely affect you as a person. So beautiful right. A pleasure to read as well.
Lovely. Thank you, everyone. And Jean, I want to back to you.
Okay, so, well, Rex, I'm coming to you, and then, guys, I'm going to run off your pieces for the year. So this piece is by Scarcely Made. What do you find, Rex?
Unfolding Laundry and Hanging Out in the Rain by Scarcely Made. She has had her way with words, tea smiles out of taciturn similes, driven a couple of enviable clever lines, Torino for an impromptu marriage, doomed by sunrise, set them free to see. If they will come back, if they don't, it's their loss, really. She isn't going to be the first to call. The only thing she clings to, precipitous rim of memory, fathomless canyon twilight at noon, hikes miles into the back country of a whim, possibly leaving the rain burning at home, but not giving it a first foot. It's the thing that probably no human has ever previously set foot. This is that sun-soft phrases to absorb heat from the rocks, soaking the day's liquid cliches in nut water, cold enough to numb fear, gathers dry wit, digs warmth out of the basic elements, plays mind games with pinprick stars, reverse engineers the origami of hearts, smoothing creases, soothing waves to mirrors, finding by chance the perfect polished metaphor of skipping into the past, dimpled on a calm lake, but carrying it for years instead, because even if an expert talk made it to the horizon, would that be profound triumph or unutterable loss? Might it boomerang back, an echo on which to hang hope, wish or query, context everything, might, both potential and strength, a talisman to touch again, and again, deep in a pocket. End poem. And Stillian, I wanted to start with you, please.
Right. So what I like about this poem is that he packed, or is it she packs? I'm not sure. Let me see. Well, they pack so much into it about this person. Again, I didn't know her, but the first stanza is really so nice. You know, she has had her way with words, tea smiles out of taciturn similes, driven a couple of enviably clever lines, Torino for an impromptu marriage. That there's so much in it about the person, and I think it's a poem that needs to be read more than once, definitely, to take everything in. I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed your reading. Your voice is so nice to listen to, you know, and you read this so beautifully. It's a wonderful poem, definitely. Well done.
Nice that you said that, Selena. Thank you very much. And Laurent, how about you?
Every poem that we read about Banjo yields further insights into who she was as a person. The bit about leaving the range burning at home, not giving it a first thought, kind of invites us to believe that she was a person who would divorce herself from her immediate reality if the mood struck her and if a thought entered her mind that needed full concentration. I mean, we call people like that scatterbrained, but they're not. They're following their dreams, their thoughts. They're very, very active intellectually. I just love getting to know her through these poems. Very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Bell, how about you?
I was taken back by this piece for just the metaphors of, you know, soaking the day's glisten and since they have milk water and coating us in unfear and then going to where it says the pieces are seething and those the mirrors, those the mirrors and finding the chance of perfect polished metaphor. What I really like is skipping the path and the dimples on a calm lake. How beautiful is that? By someone's spirit. You know, even with the calmness, you still put a smile upon something that her writings would bring such emotion in a poet. And they said that, you know, if you look at A&M, it said that, you know, your words were always where I went first when coming to all poetry. And I could see why I look at Banjo's work, and it's just a stunning work, and it reads raw reality. And I think this person is another great tribute to that poet. Amazing job.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. And Gray, how about you?
You know, you can feel the influence that she had in his words as you read his poem. You know, it captures so much of her essence that is profound. And, beautiful poem.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Let's see. The next one I have up is by Felon. And Felon, if you'd be so kind. Ready?
Okay. Let it go. Well, let's see here. Oh, this is mine. Oh. Okay. This is by Felon. Little seed, but then it's all. Nails tip the reach, drawing blood off silent, not letting you go. Scales fill epidermis, decaying to a spirit cold. Phallic wires root insanity shelter. Symbolic is the crazy blood flow of helter-skelter. Calcium growls off death-stained teeth. Exhale is the impale, a stench within a breeze. Dread pulls all the scenes, dressings to self-awareness dreams. Acts that fail, that fall to input that thought that are to go unseen. Deep beneath all of what one portrays, deeds of a sinner breed matter within the gray. Monsters chasing fear, at times keeping us awake. Breathe the seeds, we breathe, our dreams can't fake. End poem.
Great read, Bill. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Sorry, can you come back around to me, please? Thank you.
Sure. Laurent, we'll start with you then.
Yep, just going to get off mute. Felon, this is such a dark rite. Well, yeah, the image is certainly dark. The phallic wires root insanity shelter, symbolic as the crazy blood flow of helter-skelter. That stanza really epitomizes the darkness and the somewhat insane context of the poem. Exhale is the impale, a stench within a breeze. That is great writing. I mean, all of it is very, very impressive. You have to be in a real, I don't want to say strange state of mind, but almost hyper-aware when you wrote this. We breed our dreams, can't fake. You're absolutely right.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Stelina, how about you?
Yes, well, I love dark rides anyway, and this is a real beauty right from the beginning, you know, nails tip, the reach drawing, blood of silent, not letting you go, scales fill epidermis, decaying to a spirit cold. This is a fantastic piece of imagery from beginning to end. You know, and I really like the last line too. We breed our dreams, can't fake. You know, breathe the seed, we breed our dreams, can't fake. This is such a great piece to the prompt as well. And I think that you did a great job with this fellow. It's a really fantastic dark ride. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank
You're
you
welcome.
All right, Ray, we're coming to you.
Yeah, congratulations on your gold for that. You know, it was a beautiful crafting, and your read was beautiful as well. But, you know, I like the darkness of it. You know, this insanity that breeds inside the darkness is fascinating. And, you know, the way you ended it with monsters chasing fear at times, keeping us awake, breathes the seed. We breed our dreams, can't fake. I mean, that's just epic. Beautiful write and an excellent read.
Thank you, Gray.
All right. So I got to say, the sort of not letting you go in that top line, the top stanza kind of hits the note to start off with, but you didn't stop there. I like calcium growls off death-stained teeth. Exhale is the impale to a stench within a breeze. Nice touch. But the one I really like was the second to last stanza. Deeds of a sinner's deed, the matter within Gray. I like that twist of notating the sinner's deeds that breed in the brain, because it twisted that around gray matter into matter within Gray. It hit that note of we breed our own insanity within our minds, and that which comes to birth in the evenings wake all the monsters we create ourselves, whether it be of us, for us, or by us. It is that which we breathe to begin with. So I like that thought.
Great. Yeah, can I say something about it right quick?
Yeah.
It just basically it's just scratching the surface of one's insanity. We all have this insane thoughts. We just don't have to really share them with anybody. We all have that little seed deep within us that's got that little center that's going to do some crazy shit. And I mean, you know, you're going to get and all about. It's usually a fleeting thought, and unless somebody puts you to you and you talk in your sleep, and then sometimes it does come out. So I think the monsters are within us all, but it's how we keep them down and not let them have the sense to ask for it to get caught in a breeze. So that's what I was saying.
Nice. Thank you, Phil. And we're coming to you, Gene.
Okay. Well, great dark piece, Phelan, and well done. So I loved your intro stanza, by the way. Laurent, I'm going to put your piece up next, so whenever you're ready. You there, Laurent?
Yeah, I just, testing the mute button, making sure it's still working, you know, at least twice a program. All right. This is called First Supper of Sleep. Hands on bully roots, moist earth, the blanket to birth. Lay the morning sun as breakfast, an elongated strip of green vertical stripes against the blue. The planter is unhinged, visions of sun and sky screaming in tandem. His brush flies in a cacophony of creation. Rocks rake the skin in tiny lightnings. Blood root plants, territorial flags. Silent throat sings the song, echoing transfusion of minerals. Cross sampling of topsoil calls for the deluge. An outpouring of prayer seeks a timely diluvium. We are beholden to sacred hands and belief in the sway of divine reason. Sowing and reaping allows earth to breathe, respire in great gulps, and so we eat at the table of kings. chill air plucks at our lungs. First rust of autumn sweeps the velvet valleys and hills. Gold pours from a faceted sky, and diamonds of the night are the first supper of sleep. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Scalina, why don't we start with you, please, first?
My bad.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure whether you could hear me. Okay, so, fantastic read of this poem, Laurent, and just a beautiful piece. I love so many lines in this piece, but I think the one that I would pick out really is the last one. You know, this line, chill air plucks at our lungs, first rust of autumn sweeps the velvet valleys and hills, gold pours from a faceted sky, and diamonds of the night are the first supper of sleep. What wonderful imagery there. You know, you can, if you close your eyes and listen to it, you can see every line. Such a wonderful write. Well done, Laurent. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Selina.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Selina. Gray, how about you?
I'll just read what I wrote in my comment. I said, Laurent, this is an epic presentation of your marvelous talent. It shines with gold and diamonds. Inspiring.
Thank you, Gray.
Beautiful read, Laurent.
And Phil, how about you?
Wow, Laurent, as always, that opening stanza just drew me in. The hands on the bully roots, moist earth, a blanket to birth. Land the morning sun as breakfast, as an unwilling strip of green, breakfast strikes against the blue. And that's basically the growth of what has just been seeded, and it's pronounced under the blue sky, and yet it is being sucked in by the sun, and probably because it's being from drought, and that's the breakfast of the morning, is that green strip, is that the sun is eating up. For me, this is just, it just screams this. Just, it's absolutely beautiful, but I mean, I think you captured, you know, something of a gardening of what can happen when the seasons change and when the exposure, and some things you can't help and you can't fix. It's nature. So I think this is just beautifully written as a first and last supper. Great job.
Thank you very much, Fallon.
Nice touch with that first and last supper there, Phil. Laurent, yeah, you hit on that note of the farmer being mad, right? The planter is unhinged, visions of sun and sky screening in tandem, notes of years spent tilling tilling his land to grow that which he considers the divine fruit of earth, so to speak. And you hit on notes of that sacred man, divine reason, and prayer. But underlining all that, we at the table of kings, there is another note. There's a spiritual note. You could walk this as a preacher also, who's working the back end of territories, trying to get people to come to church, and railing against that and this other thing. Planting the seed in one person, hope to grow to another one. So you work in two thoughts within this work, the same angle, and they're both kind of a little crazy in the moment because things don't always work out the way they want to. And also, you spend enough time trying to do something and not getting the results that you want. It has a draw on mentality itself.
Great comment, my friend.
Thank you. You're welcome. Jean, we're coming to you.
Okay. Well, Laurent, I thought that was a wonderful piece. Wonderful imagery and thoughts throughout, and I think you did a great job with it. So, well done.
Thanks, Jean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Frank. I have Selena's. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to skip over that one. I had it up, and then I lost it. Story of my day. Okay, let me grab Selena's. And here we go. Okay. got it. Sorry, Frank. You're on hold for a few. Don't get upset. It's not going to be better than that. Okay, here we go. And it's open.
My youth, you stole my beauty. You turned my life into a service of duty. Yeah, you whispered words I wanted to hear, but then when you had me, you never came near. Deprived of love, deprived of affection, you went and tore away every connection. You didn't want a lover, just a dutiful wife. But hey man, what about my life? I never know what mood you'll be in. Can't count the times your dinner went in the bin. So many lonely nights watching TV. A bit of tears that others couldn't see. A carefree girl that asked only for love. A cruel, heartless words and push and shove. What the hell did I ever do to you? So give you all my love, loyal and true. I don't know who to trust, I feel so insecure. Even making a friend leaves me so unsure. Parts of me no longer exist. It's been so long since I was even kissed. That happy girl who laughed and smiled with all the charm of an innocent child, all swept away in your selfish sea. Now what's gonna become of me? I'm no longer young, no longer pretty. Still have my brain and I'm kinda witty. But most men out there are not looking for that. They're not that interested in intellectual chat. All the ones I like just don't like me. My world in a nutshell, fait accompli. So I'm resigned to being alone. Any pleasure I find is only unknown. Is a little love asking too much? A fond embrace, an eager touch. I want to feel alive inside, but I won't beg, I still have my right. I'll give you all you want and more. I'll make you sigh, I'll make you roar. I have so much that I want to share. If you're that man, come and take me there. So kicking you to the curb, well it's about time. What if I find a guy who's not in his prime? I've lived with less all of these years. A handsome face that only brought me tears. I want some kindness, someone who makes me laugh. To hold my hand walking down life's path. A man who's not afraid to show passion. And when I hurt, a little compassion. So why is that all too much to ask? Ain't like it's an arduous task to have a woman who's passionate and kind. Come on guys, are you out of your minds? But if it's to be and that's the deal, that I no longer have the right to feel, then so be it, I must accept my fate. But hey, give me a call before it's too late. Is a little love asking too much? A fond embrace, an eager touch. I want to feel alive inside, but I won't beg, I still have my pride. I'll give you all you want and more. I'll make you sigh, I'll make you roar. I have so much that I want to share. If you're that man, come on. There.
Great read, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. That was wonderful. And Bell, you're stepping up to take the first on this one. What do you think?
Fell and dropped.
Oh, okay. Then that was you there, Gray.
I thought that was beautiful. You know, I mean, I don't know whether you mastered the soundtrack to that or You know, you just happen to use a pre-existing recording, but it fit perfectly with your singing and your rap. I thought it was just so astutely done. You know, like, you're so talented, Stelina. It's just amazing.
Thank you. Actually, it was for a contest. Afasiana's contest. She's doing Beat Wars. So this was the second challenge. So I had no choice, had to rap.
That's amazing. Beautifully done.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jay. Laurent, how about you?
Well, I made two comments on this particular piece. The first one was, a dutiful wife, you said it. A one-dimensional relationship like that offers very little for the neglected partner. Certainly, you're not asking too much. A labor of love, so to speak. I enjoyed your piece and its energy. The second one is, I should have listened to the SoundCloud before commenting the first time. What a performance. As a listener, it seems professionally produced and worthy of a much wider audience. I love the rhythm of the music. Yeah, really. I love the rhythm of the music, marrying the tempo and delivery. You blew me away with the different styles of singing and rapping. You are so
good.
Thank
you. Thank you very much. Actually, it was a Fasiana's choice, you know, of music. We had to fit to that, so, you know, can't take credit for the choice of music. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. New challenge.
Yeah. I could listen to that on the radio and think, you know, put it on my list.
A new career then, maybe.
Yes. Yeah.
I better yep, phone so. Ice Cube or somebody then.
No, I'll leave them alone.
I think Laurent hit that up. The minute the SoundCloud said, you came through with something that was most unexpected, a very different side of you. And this was wonderful.
And a minute.
Yes, the rapping that you ran through the first four stanzas, and then you offer up that chorus, which offers a different tone and a slowed down voice without the rap in it, just the load of questions, so to speak, that and the thought of is a little love asking too much. And then you hit on that fourth line, but I won't beg, I still have my pride. You slowed that down a little bit more, and you did the same thing with the last line that says, if you're that man, come and take me there. And then to finish it out, you actually slowed it down a little further and gave me and there some space to offer up that note of yes, come and deliver. I'm here for you. And Jean, how about you?
Stelina, I thought that was outstanding. It really was very well done.
Thank you.
I had a very professional sound to it, actually, and I'm impressed. I think definitely. So good luck in that contest. I think you're a good contender there. So.
Yeah, I think we've got eight more to do. So,
oh, right.
I don't know what's coming next.
Well, I sound like she's keeping you on your toes.
Yeah, you know, she could come up with a piece of opera that I'm out.
I just want to be sure to be able to tell everybody that Parts in a Part Saint will not be happening tonight. Faziana is ill and Babbler was unable to make it. So I believe they're going to carry everything over to next Friday. So I just don't want anybody like sitting here going, where's the show? Anyway, great. So 60 seconds left. It was a wonderful show tonight. Thank you everybody who called in. Thank you, Laurent. Thank you, Stellan. Thank you, Dre. And always, Rex, thank you for co-hosting with me. Stelina, I'm glad you called in. That was a great piece. And it was a lot. We got a lot of compliments. I think I have, like, I don't know, a lot of carryovers already, though. Like over 10 or 12, maybe 13. I have a lot. So next Friday is going to be standing room only again. So anything that gets on after that standing room only sign, I can't guarantee you're going to be ready. So, but I will do my best. I try. Everybody have a wonderful night and a great weekend.
You too, everyone.
care, and it was good having you all here. And I'll see you all soon. Lex, behave yourself. I'll talk to you later.
Good night, everyone. Good night, everyone.
Let's go, everybody. Good night.
Bonne nuit.
Bonne nuit.